Sky Jam Show will be starting in 2 minutes. We will be observing the National Memorial Day moment of silence at 3 o'clock.
What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century? And how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state government?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that. It's sovereign. It's, you've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity. And therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
What are you, on dope?
We think so, too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
And good afternoon. Good to have you along with us. Nothing like a computer error to start off the program. And we did observe the National Memorial Day moment of silence, a minute of silence at the top of the hour. Glad to have all of you along with us on this day, realizing that holidays are kind of slow days normally on the radio, and we are here at the Head On Radio Network, plan on having live programming for you all day up and through the evening, so stand by. After our program, Bruce Birch will be along, and then Bob Kincaid a little later on, so we'll have live programming for you all day long, and we promise to have a good show for you. Today, we hope to have a very meaningful program for you today. It won't probably be as bombastic as it usually is, as controversial as it usually is, but and nonetheless, hope that we educate and entertain you and keep you interested in the program all day today. Today is Memorial Day. What have you done today about Memorial Day? There are many, many activities that one might do on Memorial Day, visiting cemeteries and placing flags or flowers on the graves of our fallen soldiers. And A lot of people visit memorials on Memorial Day, and a lot of people fly the U.S. flag. In fact, it is recommended and suggested that you fly the U.S. flag at half staff until noon on Memorial Day. And the POW-MIA flag as well can be flown today, should be flown today. And by participating in the National Moment of Remembrance at 3 p.m. to pause and think upon the true meaning of the day. And, of course, taps will be played all day long at various venues throughout the day. And also, I think we can all observe Memorial Day by renewing all of our pledges to aid the widows and widowers and orphans of our fallen dead, and to aid the disabled veterans as well, and to do what we can in the government and in the private sector as well to make sure that all of those who have served get treated with the honor and respect and care that they deserve. So good to have all of you along with us today. We're going to do our tribute to those who gave all today and to those who have served. And not being a peacenik, I do realize that when the country's in danger and the diplomacy has run its course and does not work, it is in fact a noble deed to take up arms and protect your country. And there have been many, many millions of people do that over the years, men and women now. And many have fallen in battle. I think there have been somewhere in the neighborhood of nearly 700,000 Americans die in battle, close to that number anyway. We'll talk a little bit today about Arlington National Cemetery. If you have not been there, I would suggest that two of the, definitely in my opinion, my humble opinion, two of the most absolutely necessary things for you to see when you go to Washington, D.C. is to cross the Potomac and see Arlington National Cemetery and the Iwo Jima Memorial over there as well. Spectacular sights. Very, very great places to go and sit and watch and reflect upon those who have given all. Very, very great place, Arlington National Cemetery, if you've never been there. We're going to talk a little bit about that today, about the history of it and so forth, and how we happen to have a Memorial Day. Did you go to a parade today? Did you have a picnic today? Maybe go to the beach? A lot of folks where we live here in Southwest Florida head for the beach today. And, of course, all around the country, I mean, at least in the Midwest, I know, Memorial Day is traditionally the first day for all the local swimming pools to open, officially. It may not be warm enough to swim yet, but nonetheless, they do have the pools open. A lot of kids, they got those blue lips from in water that's too cold. But the weather's been rather nice up north this year so far, so I'm sure a lot of kids will be enjoying the day at their local swimming pool. The water in the Gulf of Mexico, I can tell you, is plenty warm enough to be swimming in right now. And, of course, a little bit different here and a little bit different all around the country, depending on where you live. When yours truly was a kid in school, Memorial Day meant that school was out. Traditionally for us, we never went to school after Memorial Day. That was it. And that was a tradition that was started in the very old days, back when rural life being what it was, farmers needed their sons home to help make hay and so forth, and it all started about then. And thus the reason for having summer vacations and the reason for them starting about Memorial Day, because, and those of you that are not farm-oriented, that's about the time the first cutting of hay comes around and time to do a lot to tilling crops and so forth. So the reason for school being out by Memorial Day, and lots of times now I understand many kids do go to school well past Memorial Day, a week or two even. And here, in of course, in our day as well, school always started the day after Labor Day. Whatever day that happened to be, we would start the day after Labor Day. Nowadays, the kids start, gee whiz, here in Florida, they start in early August. So it's quite different nowadays, but nonetheless. We would invite you to call the program today, 866-546-5254. Be glad to have you along with us today, 866-546-5254. And we do hope you'll join our thread. Those of you that are listening through Democratic Underground thread, we hope you'll participate on there today. And we've got some nice music that we've assembled for the day today. And, well, just many, many, many nice things for today. So we hope you'll join us. Looking back over history, our first war as a country, the Revolutionary War, really started in 1775, and it lasted all of 8 years. Went on up to 1783. Almost all of it was fought on the Eastern Seaboard. And it ended when the Treaty of Paris was signed on September 3rd, 1783. And a lot of people don't know this. An interesting fact to so many people is that in all of the Revolutionary War on the American side, there were only 4,435 dead. When you consider the very small population we had at the time, that was a very significant number. But as wars go, 4,435 gave their lives to free this country from the British back in the 18th century. So that was an interesting time, our first real war in this country. And then along came the 19th century, and we had the War of 1812, again, a war that's forgotten so many times by many students of history. The War of 1812 lasted until 1815, and part of it was in Canada, the eastern seaboard of the United States, and a lot of it around the Great Lakes and Lake Champlain. And it ended with the Treaty of Ghent and was signed on December 24th in 1814. And really, a little-known fact is that it had been signed on December 24th, 1814, and unaware of the treaty, because, you know, no telephones and no fax machines and all that, General Andrew Jackson engaged and crushed the British at New Orleans some 15 days later after the treaty had been signed in January 8, 1815. So a lot of people don't know that. American casualties, approximately 2,260 in the War of 1812. We had the Mexican War in 1846, lasted till 1848. It took place, of course, in northern Mexico and southwestern United States, including modern-day Texas, California, New Mexico. And it ended with the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, and it was signed on February 2nd, 1848. 13,283 casualties, American casualties in the Mexican War. Very, very significant number of folks died in that war. The Civil War, probably the worst blight upon our American history, in my opinion. Something that should never have been, I guess. When you think back across history and see what led up to it and all, it probably was inevitable that it would happen, but tragic nonetheless. Lasted from 1861 to 1865, and it was primarily in the eastern half of the United States, east of the Mississippi River. And it ended when Robert E. Lee surrendered to Ulysses S. Grant at the small settlement of Appomattox House in southwestern Virginia on April 9, 1865. Here's a fact that many people are shocked at when they hear. American casualties, the Union forces lost 646,000 people in that war. The Confederate forces, 133,000. So many, many, many more Union forces died than Confederate forces. Of course, there were many more Union forces than Confederate forces in that war. And then we went along to the Spanish-American War. It's April 25th to August 12th, 1898, so it only lasted, April, May, June, July, only about 4 months, mainly in the Spanish possessions of Cuba and the Philippines, and it ended. The Treaty of Paris was signed on December 10th, 1898, and there were 2,446 American casualties in that war. And it seems as though the longer history goes in the United States, the more wars we get involved in. I hope we don't have one with the casualties we had in the Civil War again. But moving along in history, 1914 to 1918, World War I, and it was fought in the Atlantic Ocean in Europe, never reached our shores. And it ended with the Treaty of Versailles in 1919, and there were 116,708, approximately, American casualties in that war. Our first real war in Europe. The war to end all wars, they said. But some 20 years later, man being what man is, and man once again succumbing to his warlike nature, we had another one starting in 1939 to 1944, of course, considered the big one by most of the folks, that the parents of folks my age, in Europe, North Africa, Asia, Australia, some of the islands, including Hawaii and Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. Japan was really the last Axis power to surrender. They surrendered on August 14, 1945, after the U.S. bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And there were 407,000 American casualties in the Second World War. Imagine that, if you will. 407,000 graves laid out upon the landscape. And, of course, man can't go very long without starting another war. And some 5 years later, war broke out in Korea, took place in northern South Korea. The war reached a stalemate in June of 53, and an armistice was finally reached on July 27th of 1953, and there were 36,500 American casualties in the Korean War. From there, we move on to Vietnam. And, of course, we know where that was fought. It ended in a defeat for the U.S. forces. The U.S. Withdrew after a ceasefire, but it was a defeat in every military man's book. It ended in a North Vietnamese victory in 1975, and there were 58,000 American casualties in the Vietnam War. The Persian Gulf War came along in August of 1990 until April of 1991. It took place in Iraq and Kuwait. It was a four-day ground war. That's all there was to it, and there were approximately 148 American casualties in that war. And now, Mr. Bush's war started, 2003. So far, there are approximately 2,500 casualties in Iraq and some nearly 300 in Afghanistan, with no end in sight for either of those places. Once again, the human condition being what it is, God only knows how long the wars will last in Afghanistan and Iraq. One would guess for a very, very long time. It appears to me that it most certainly will be a very, very long time. You're welcome to give us a call and put in your 2 cents worth on anything we have to say today. 866-546-5254. We'd love to hear from you. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment or two. Beautiful tune over there. Very poignant tune for this Memorial Day. Glad you're with us today on this very solemn day in America. A lot of people able to distinguish between the two, to have a holiday and yet pay their respects to the fallen as well. If you have any personal stories, we'd like to hear them. Give us a call at 866-546-5254. I think just about everybody's got a story, a family story of some kind. Many folks my age do, most certainly, with so many, many, many people being in the Second World War. So many parents, so many dads, and mothers, too. One time, this is something we need not forget, that in the Second World War, at least, although there were no ladies in battle at that time, and still not supposed to be today, but often, as you know, they're definitely in harm's way today. There are definitely several hundred thousand women served admirably in the Second World War in various duties, and they could not have done without them. So many, many times we tend to forget and diminish the stronger sexes. And that's the ladies, by the way. Diminish their role in the wars. So we do need to keep that in mind. We welcome you to the Guy James Show today. As we mentioned early on in the program, it's a little bit different program today than normally we have. We're usually hammering away on the administration or talking about Democratic politics. Today we're going to stay away from that as much as we can. We will mention it somewhat, probably in the second hour, most likely. But for the most part, for the first hour, we want to do everything we can to honor our fallen Americans on this Memorial Day. Memorial Day that, to me, is special. It's special in as much that it isn't an election year, and here I do bring politics into this, but it is an election year. And we are in a war that so many Americans abhor at this point. So many Americans feel that this war has been absolutely pointless, that Mr. Bush's war was totally unnecessary, unfounded, unwarranted, and was started on the basis of statements and pronouncements that just weren't true. A horrible way to have a war started, a very horrible way to have a war started. We must not forget this. We must not forget the sacrifice and the heroism of those who serve, nor must we forget how trivially and frivolously their service has been used and abused. If we forget this, in either our prayers or when you cast your ballots this November, the terrorists will win. And in many cases, we know they have been so far, with many of our rights being folks wanting to take away some of our rights. And I think it's quite appropriate to bring that up on Memorial Day, that in a time when there are those in the government of the United States of America that do want to take away and crush some of the rights that we have in our country, I think it's a disservice to everybody, to every man and woman who's ever died in the service of the country, of this country. It is most definitely a disservice to them to step on the rights guaranteed us in the Bill of Rights, as they're trying to do right now. I try not to make this political today, but I do feel that the many hundreds of thousands who have died over the years have given their lives, have given all to protect the rights and freedoms of American citizens. And if they could know what is happening today in our very own country from our very own government, with some of those freedoms wanting to be taken away, some of those rights be taken away or diminished, I think they would be sad. I know they'd be very sad. I know I would, were in that position. Those of you that are your history buffs, and I am one of those, how many of you know the story behind Arlington National Cemetery? And let me say again, if you have not been to Washington, D.C., it's probably the first place you ought to go. I'm not kidding. You drive into Washington, D.C., and especially when, you know, you can see Washington's monument from a long ways away. And if you fly into National Airport, and I'm not going to call it what they call it today, but if you fly into Washington and into National Airport, for God's sakes, don't fly into Dulles because it's 40 miles outside of town. It's a $50 cab ride into town. Maybe not 40 miles, but it's a long way. You know, the first sight you see when you fly in over town is you literally see the whole thing laid out there in front of you. You fly right over the Lincoln Memorial and Arlington, and I mean, you see it all right out your airplane window. If you drive in, the first thing you see is the Washington Monument. And there are so many wonderful things to see, it's hard to decide what to go see first. If you've got kids, of course, the kids love the Mint, I can tell you that. The kids love to go to the U.S. Mint, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, and see the money being printed. One of our relatives, one of our very close relatives, was in charge of that building in Fort Knox and treasurer of the United States for 8 years under the Clinton administration, so we're very familiar with that. But that's, and you get a really great tour of Washington, of the Mint when you go and see that. You can see them printing the money, and it's very impressive to the youngsters, very, very much so. And, of course, the Capitol building. The Capitol building is not as free and accessible as it used to be since 9/11. You cannot, without us being in a very special group, you cannot go up under the rotunda anymore. You have to stay in like this visitor center down below, and that's just a doggone shame because every kid in America ought to get to go up to the rotunda and see the Hall of Presidents and all of that, and stand in the middle of the rotunda where the caskets of so many great Americans have rested. And did you know that right directly underneath the middle of the main floor, right under the rotunda, the circle there, that was to be the burial place of George Washington? There's actually a crypt underneath the floor there that was to be the burial place of George Washington. But his wife wanted him buried out at Mount Vernon, and we've been to that. And it is a very modest crypt that he has at Mount Vernon. Very modest. You will see, I can tell you, if you've not been to Mount Vernon and seen our first president's crypt, you can go to the local cemetery and see crypts every bit as impressive as George Washington's. But it is there at Mount Vernon. And a lot of people don't know that there was a crypt made especially for George Washington. And, of course, Washington, D.C., as you folks know, was named for George Washington. He was a surveyor in his youth and surveyed that whole swampy town, and it was a swamp. That's exactly what it was. It was a swamp, nearly the whole town. Fascinating history in that city. Oh, I do love it so, and it's a wonderful place to go. Of course, if you go visit, you can't not go up in the top of the Washington Monument and get the view of everything. The Smithsonian, you could stay in there for days. Some say if you spent 1 minute in front of every 1 minute in front of every display in the Smithsonian Institute that you would stay there for a lifetime. So keep that in mind and keep moving. The National Art Gallery, absolutely spectacular. I was lucky enough to be there one time when the works of El Greco were on display, my very favorite painter. I was just awestruck by that. And, of course, the Jefferson Memorial, the White House. Many of these things becoming less accessible than it used to be, but you can still get around and see a pretty good view of it. And I also always recommend that you cross the river and see the Iwo Jima Memorial. Stunning. Stunning. Go see that at twilight when the lights first come on and the sun has just set. Absolutely. Can't tell you. Well, I hope you don't mind getting a history lesson today for some of you that have never been to Washington, D.C. Oddly enough, I know some of my good friends haven't been to Washington, D.C., talking about going. And George Washington did love the area. He surveyed the landscape of the area when he was about 17 years old. Boy, he was out surveying at 17. And when assigned by Congress to select an area for our nation's capital, he didn't look all that far from his home at Mount Vernon and selected the site near Georgetown that, of course, would become the District of Columbia. And overlooking that district on the other side of the Potomac was the lush landscape, I would call it, of a 1,100-acre tract that would now pass to the president's heirs. And that, of course, was being Mount Vernon. George and Martha Washington had no children of their own. And I won't go through the whole long string of events, but through marriage and so forth, it ended up with Robert E. Lee. A lot of people don't know that. Robert E. Lee was related to George Washington, was great-great-grandson. The man that stood up at George Washington's funeral and eulogized him, stood up and said those famous words, first in war, first in peace, first in the hearts of his countrymen. It was a congressman, and he was a war hero in his own right, a former general, Harry Lighthorse Lee. Harry Lighthorse Lee was the father of Robert E. Lee. Interesting story, I think. Mount Vernon's a great place to go, too. You look across the beautiful porch on the back of that building, look down upon the river, and it's like, my, oh, my, George had it pretty good here at this place. We're going to talk about the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier in a few minutes, and right now we're going to take a little break, and I wanted to give my own personal tribute to Memorial Day, this Memorial Day weekend, and so I prepared a little something for you, and I hope you'll enjoy it.
My favorite holidays have always been the ones where we reflect on the history and heritage of the freedom we so easily take for granted. Veterans Day, Memorial Day, Independence Day, they are as deeply ingrained for me as my own name. And I've always loved the parades, especially the patriotic music, the national colors, the tiny flags everywhere. But most moving of all is the procession of veterans, the VFW troops, the American Legion, the auxiliaries. I love to watch the veterans' faces as they march proudly by. When I was a child, the faces of the aged old men and women, heroes from another time when a man's word was his bond and character was everything. Their shoulders were stooped, their walks were slow, but their heads were held high. Garrison caps perched jauntily on whitened hair, their frail bodies still remembering the unmistakable sound of left, right, left, and their eyes were still just as bright, and they're proud to be here, proud to say I served my country and kept her free. In their lifeline profiles, I see another era. I see younger faces and cocky smiles, the screaming Mustangs and lumbering tanks. I see the artillery-scarred forest of Bastogne, the pitted beaches of Normandy. And I hear them vainly exhort their blood-soaked brothers to hang on, Joe, you're going to be okay. I see the sepia-tinted photos of innocent, idealistic boys who posed for the camera on their way to war and came back as men in flag-draped boxes. They're everywhere, these veterans. The old man who bags your groceries at the grocery store watched the flag go up at Iwo Jima. Your friend's grandpa spent long, terrifying minutes in a fire and brimstone French sky in 1944, just hoping his parachute would hold long enough for him to get to the ground. And that young-looking guy on crutches who you held the door for yesterday left his right leg and his best friend in Iraq. And the old lady who lives down the street held the hands and lives of thousands of wounded soldiers in an undersupplied hospital. These men and women are dying now as their seemingly endless age draws to a close. Their sacrifice, their gifts, lives on in the face of well-known soldiers like Sergeant York and Audie Murphy, but it also lives in the faces of regular guys like your friends, my friends, and our relatives. Good men and women who did their duty and refused to believe that they're heroes. It lives in the white stone that marks the resting places of hundreds of thousands of American veterans around the globe. It breathes forever in the path worn by the unfaltering steps of a silent guard in front of the tomb of the unknown. On Memorial Day, we honor those rare souls of extraordinary grace who gave their lives in battle far too soon, so that the nation they loved more than life itself might live. And this day, this especially poignant Memorial Day, please pause to remember those who gave all they had, and make a personal vow to do your part to see that someday in America's future, we won't have any new graves filled with those who died in battle.
Oh, When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
Told Walmart to sell the Easter egg die kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, that's for sure. You do not want to miss Bob Kincaid nightly from 7 to 10 p.m. You will enjoy his program, I promise you, as you will enjoy all of the programs on Head On Radio Network. All coming to you live all day today. We started 10 hours of live broadcasting. Most of the big shot broadcasters are taking Memorial Day off, and we thought, well, somebody's got to be here to give you live programming today because you get tired of reruns. I know you do. I see you mentioned it on the internet, so we're glad you're along with us this afternoon. Nonetheless, very, very glad to have you along with us. You know, we were talking earlier about Arlington House, the Lee Mansion, and Robert E. Lee, as things got passed down through the years, did inherit the mansion, and they called it Arlington House. And in 1857, his wife's parents died, and it was actually on her side of the family, and that the home was in, the Custis family. And Robert E. Lee came home from his position as superintendent of the same academy from which he'd graduated, and that is West Point. A lot of folks don't know that Robert E. Lee left West Point as a superintendent. And as title to Arling House passed to his wife, which is how it was in those days, stayed in the family bloodline. Why, anyway, they went about and reconstructed the home a little bit, restored a lot of it, put in some of the areas of the large Greek columns in the front and so forth. It was a very, very large house. It's a very beautiful home, I might add, which with one of the most spectacular views you could ever have, looking across the Potomac toward the mall at Washington, D.C. And during the war, the house was confiscated by the U.S. government, and they buried a lot of Union soldiers around it, and they did that on purpose to make sure that Robert E. Lee would never live there again. As you might imagine, they were a little bit sore at him for defecting to the South after being the commandant of West Point. So anyway, that's how it ended up being a national cemetery. And they first built, I've got my notes around here someplace, I think they first buried about 1,800 soldiers right around where the Rose Garden was, made a big crypt and buried 1,800 Union soldiers there, and that definitely ensured that the Lee family would never come back there to live again. And after the war was over, after the death of his parents, the eldest son of Robert E. Lee and Mary Ann Lee brought suit against the government, claiming that the estate of his parents had been illegally confiscated. And in 1882, the United States Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, we've heard that before, agreed with George Washington's great-great-grandson, and they paid him $150,000 to purchase the estate, a goodly sum in those days. And 50 years later, in July of 1933, Arlington House was transferred from the War Department to the U.S. Department of the Interior. And while the cemetery that surrounds that beautiful ornate structure is one of only two such sites operated by the United States Army, Arlington House and the grounds surrounding it are, of course, administered by the National Park Service. And Arlington House itself was dedicated to the memory of Robert E. Lee, and in 1914, President Woodrow Wilson dedicated a special memorial to the Confederate dead of the Civil War at Arlington. A beautiful place, and a place to go and reflect Arlington House, and you can look and you can see, look across the landscape, and of course see the beautiful Arlington Cemetery. And I don't know whether to say if you're lucky enough or what the actual word would be to be there on a day when the actual burial ceremony takes place. It's a most impressive sight, I can tell you. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Hot Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hello, Juanita.
It's a great show.
Thank you.
I would like to pay tribute to someone that in my family who was in World War II.
Yes.
If I could. I mean, he wasn't the only one, but I've been thinking a lot about him lately. And he was, his name was Uncle Joe, and he was in all 4 years in the Pacific. And after the war, then he was in the Army, and then he joined the Air Force. And he was also in the Korean War. And anyway, he had become real sick due to laying on the ground, you know, while the Japanese were walking around and
mm-hmm.
all. Anyway, he had a drinking problem, and I'm bringing that up for a specific reason. And he had been in, he would lose his stripes because he wasn't too nice when he was drinking. But anyway, he was in like 19 years and something, and a captain had him court-martialed, and he had like $35 a month to live on. But during that time, he did give up drinking, and he had kept his residency in another state, and the state senator went to bat for him and got him all of his rights back.
Oh.
And he, you know, he was so happy. He was fixing him up a little place to live, and anyway, then he died. He didn't live a whole lot longer, but I've just been thinking a lot about him lately, and I just wanted to...
Well, that's a wonderful story to know that he got that restored to him before he died. And it probably was not so much the money, although it helped, but it was good to know that his dignity and his honor had been restored to him, most of all.
Yeah, it helped him in many, many ways.
Yes.
So I just want to pay a tribute to him because, you know, they went through a lot for us.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Indeed they did.
And your program is great.
Well, thank you.
I love the way you're presenting it. Thank you very
much. Well, we've got a lot more for you today. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you know, almost every family has a story. I had Mr. Murphy that lived in my community. he didn't like to talk about it very much, but Mr. Murphy was a tail gunner, and you've all seen those tail gunners and the bombers. And not being a military hardware expert that I am, I think it was in the B-24s, had that glass bubble in the back with the tail gunners. A frightening job to have. Frightening job, because when the fighter planes swooped down upon the bombers, first place they came at usually was at the rear end of the plane. And they wore parachutes, the gunners did, because you never knew when they're going to... Everybody had their parachutes on. You never knew when they're going to have to bail out. And Mr. Murphy, two times, had to bail out of a bomber high above enemy territory, and bailed out twice. And twice, once, ended up over the Pyrenees Mountains into Spain and saved that way. Went right back and got right back in it again and did it over again. So he was kind of our local military hero in the neighborhood. And, of course, we did have somebody in our little community, too, that had earned the Congressional Medal of Honor, a gentleman by the name of Martin. And he won the Congressional Medal of Honor for great valor, which is definitely what that takes. They don't pass out those every day. Do you have friends or family maybe in the military now? Do you have parents that were in the Second World War? I can barely remember when I was a child that there were still some people still alive that had fought in the Civil War. I was just a little kid, but there were just a handful then, and now, of course, they're all gone. And recently, I read where the last widow of a Civil War veteran died. She had married a gentleman who was very, very elderly, and she was very, very young. And she just passed away recently. So I wonder, was she getting widow's benefits for all these years? I kind of doubt it from the Civil War. Yeah, my own father was in the Pacific Theater, joined on the first day after December 7th, him and a brother, and spent the war in the Navy in the Pacific. And they've all got an interesting story or two to tell. My father went in the Navy with a bushy head of hair and came out as bald as a cue ball. And there were many, many gentlemen that had the same fate, and they said it was because of fright. And I don't doubt that a bit after some of the stories that you hear. And I don't think I ever really appreciated, I don't think I ever really appreciated my father talking about being in the Navy. I mean, it was interesting to hear the stories and all, but my wife and I were in New Orleans several years ago. And we went in a destroyer that was based there on the Mississippi, a World War II destroyer that they had on display. No thanks. No thank you would I want to be in that boat. I mean, if you slept in the top bunk, first of all, destroyer had a small beam, which meant it's not very wide, and they bobbed around like a cork. They were the fastest boats in you know, protecting the rest of the fleet. But you literally slept with your nose to the ceiling of the thing, pipes running everywhere, a god-awful thing to have to do. And if you think that's bad, think about the guys in the submarines. Did get a chance to go through a submarine. I can't even imagine that. Being claustrophobic, I can't even imagine being in the most modern submarine in the world today. So my hats off to those folks. But one interesting story that my father told me when I was a kid. He was in the war when it ended and was on Guam, the island of Guam. And for several months, they just had their ship docked there, moored there, and they stayed there for 2 or 3 months and were ashore and had tents set up and, you know, ate and slept on shore instead of on the ship. They had a skeleton crew out on the ship. But the Japanese men that were up in the hills of Guam did not know that the war was over. And, of course, the Americans did. And so what they started doing, they knew that certainly some of them, one of them at least, one of the Japanese soldiers must be able to read English. And every night the Japanese would come down out of the hills and raid the garbage cans because they had nothing to eat. They were stranded there by their military, and they had nothing to eat, and they were foraging for whatever they could get. And so they came down out of the hills and raided the garbage cans of the Navy and the Army bases there. Oddly enough, I knew a man there that was in the Army at the same time as my father, and they must have sat beside each other at a more or less a drive-in movie, only it was an outdoor movie where you sat on benches and watched it on Guam. But they wrapped the garbage. They started wrapping the garbage in American newspapers that said the war was over. And pretty soon after that, a few days after that, the Japanese soldiers that were on Guam came down with their hands raised and surrendered, knowing that the war was over. Some didn't. Some didn't surrender. But I always thought that was an interesting story. And I also had a very, very good friend that was one of the first troops in Nagasaki after the war, one of the very first American troops. And I mean talking like, you know, the first couple of hundred that went in there and some of the unbelievable sights that they saw because of the atomic bomb being dropped. No one at that time had any idea of how awful it was until they actually saw it. And he told the story of being on Tinian Island when they heard that heard some big weapon was coming in. They heard, you know, scuttlebutt in the service. They heard this big, big weapon was coming in. It was going to just be an awful weapon, going to be just something great for the American military. And so they looked forward to it. And nothing came, and nothing came, and nothing came. And one day, two or three B-29s came flying in, the Super Fortress. One of them with Captain Paul Tibbetts from Columbus, Ohio, at the helm, and the scuttlebutt got around that the big weapon came in on a ship, and now they were putting it in one of those planes, and it was a bomb. And so then that was like, oh, I see. It's just a bomb. Nobody took it seriously. These guys, nobody knew about nuclear weapons or anything. And if a bomb was in an airplane, how big could it be? And it couldn't be that devastating and couldn't be much worse than anything else that they dropped on the Japanese. So they weren't all that impressed. And then only a few days later, they heard the actual results of what happened there. But all kinds of very interesting stories go around like that. And many gentlemen from the Vietnam War, many personal stories, probably some Vietnam vets listening right now. And if you are, I hope you would give us a call at 866-546-5254. There's one thing that seems to be present in every military situation, no matter where it is after a while, no matter what the conflict, you are there fighting for your buddies. You probably for a moment forget about the flag and God and country and all that, and you're with your band of brothers, and they're all there to protect one another, and all you want to do is get out alive. I've heard that story over and over and over again, that especially when some guys have been called heroes and said, well, you know, you did this for your country. He said, like hell. I did it to save my buddies and my own skin, and a byproduct was doing it for your country, you know. So interesting to hear those stories as well. I knew a gentleman very, very well who was a helicopter pilot in Vietnam, and some fascinating stories to hear from those guys. So I don't know. Interesting. Very, very interesting. I think we're going to take a break right now. Don't go anywhere. And we're going to have news at the top of the hour, and we'll be back.
This is the Quality News Network. In Kabul, Afghanistan today, anti-American riots have killed at least 8 people and injured more than 100. U.S. and Afghan troops fired on protesters, killing 4 civilians. Riots were sparked by an accident in which an American Humvee plowed into a traffic jam, striking a dozen cars, killing at least 5 people and injuring more than a dozen. In southern Afghanistan, U.S. forces said they led an airstrike on a mosque. More than 50 Taliban guerrillas were reportedly killed. In Indonesia, emergency relief is arriving as the death toll from Saturday's devastating earthquake rises. More than 5,000 have died. Another 10,000 were injured in the magnitude 6.3 tremor. More than 100,000 Indonesians lost their homes. In Iraq, CBS News is reporting a network videographer and soundman were killed today in Baghdad. An American and an Iraqi contractor also died. CBS correspondent Kimberly Dozier was severely wounded, as were 6 U.S. soldiers. The incident occurred when a convoy hit a roadside bomb. Sectarian violence continues in Iraq. Today, 50 Iraqis were killed in separate bombings and shootings in and around Baghdad. Another 80 were wounded. Senator John Murtha says a November incident in which U.S. Marines gunned down 24 unarmed Iraqi civilians has seriously damaged America's efforts to win the hearts and minds of the Iraqi people. The Pentagon is investigating the deaths. Senate hearings are scheduled. In Guantanamo Bay, the number of prisoners staging a hunger strike has grown from 3 to 75. The UN and international medical organizations have protested the U.S. military practice of strapping prisoners down and force-feeding them. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist is backing off on his earlier criticism of an unprecedented FBI raid of a congressman's Capitol Hill office, now saying it was okay. The New York Times is reporting the U.S. Attorney General and FBI Director have threatened to resign if the White House demands evidence be relinquished in the bribery scandal of that Louisiana congressman. Americans today are being asked to observe a minute of silence at 3 p.m. to commemorate Memorial Day. At least 2,466 American troops have been killed in Iraq. More than 18,000 have been wounded. You're listening to the Quality News Network. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Lawsuits have been filed against AT&T and Verizon after the telecom giants secretly turned over customers' phone records to the U.S. government spies. The ACLU says the two companies violated California state law by doing so. Two-thirds of Americans say cell phone use while driving should be outlawed. A survey released this weekend says, however, most do not favor banning cell phones in restaurants or theaters. GM is expected today to announce the new plant several months ago, following a parts dispute with its Russian partner. GM is recalling Corvettes for problems that may cause the car's roofs to fly off. Volkswagen is recalling Jettas and new Beetles for problems with brake lights. About 400,000 cars in the U.S. are involved in the recalls. A wildcat strike today shut down public transport in Toronto, Canada. More than 700,000 commuters have been affected. CNN is reporting the resignation of U.S. Treasury Secretary John Snow is imminent. Sources say the White House continues to look for a cabinet replacement. General Electric announced its sales in China are expected to rise 20% this year and double within 5 years. The company says China's new anti-pollution laws are increasing demands for cleaner engines and energy plants. Markets in New York are closed today. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, indeed, we are back, and so glad to have all of you with us on this holiday, Memorial Day, 2006. Oh, 2006. It pains me when I think about that. 2006. Time is marching on for certain. Memorial Day is an important day in many, many families around the country, and it should be to all of us. We can pay them no greater honor than to paint each one of them into our memory and to promise each in our own way and each in our own thoughts that we'll never forget. And for as long as any here live, their memorial won't be just the last Monday in May. Their memorial is their lives that have been sculpted into the hearts of their friends, and a memorial enduring for the generations all of you have left to live. a memorial that comes to life when we speak of them, and as we've been doing here today so far, and laugh over their antics and cry over them and talk to our family and friends about them, or sit quietly and feel the pain of their loss to our fellowship and to their family's fellowship. So something we need to always remember on this very solemn day. And that's not to say you can't go out and have a good time today too, but most definitely take some time and remember what this day is all about. They shall not grow old as we that are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them. Had a very poignant, I'll save this. I had something very poignant sent to me by a mother who lost a son in Iraq. And I'm not going to read the whole letter, but I'm going to read what she said about Arlington. And if I can, I'm not sure. But anyway, we see Mr. Bush on TV today talking about Memorial Day. And on this day that we remember, the Day of Remembrance, Mr. Bush goes out and utters obscenities. And I believe the things he says are obscenities, like he said today, that we've seen the cost in the war on a terror that we fight today. Yeah, we've seen the cost, all right. We've seen the cost. We've seen the cost of sending an army, a huge army, into a place where covert actions by the Navy SEALs and the berets would be more fitted, and every military man knows that. And he said, I'm in awe of the men and women who sacrificed for the freedom of the United States of America. Is he? Would he have started this war if he's in awe of that sacrifice, if it really meant anything to him? I'm sorry to bring politics into the day, but I can't not when I hear him saying some things that I heard him say today. Hey, let's move on. We were talking about one of the most fascinating things. Definitely, if you go to Washington, D.C., go see this. Take your children to see this. It'll leave an imprint on their mind they will never forget, I promise you. And that's the Tomb of the Unknown Soldiers at Arlington. A fascinating ceremony to see. It goes on 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, even when the cemetery gates are locked to the public. The guard, the honor guard, is still there through the coldest of winter, when a hurricane was coming, when a tornado is coming, no matter what is coming. That tomb has never been abandoned. The men in charge of that always carry on, and they are quite an elite group. In our very own local paper here today, we had a gentleman, had a story in about his service and taking care of the unknown, and fascinating, and that reminded me of some stories I had seen about it recently, so I dug some of them up for you. Little quiz here. How many steps does the guard take during his walk across the tomb of the unknowns, and why? It's, of course, 21 steps, and it alludes to the 21-gun salute, which is the highest honor given any military or foreign dignitary. And the guards do make 21-step walk past the Tomb of the Unknown because 21 is considered a number of special significance. And this is from, by the way, the Arlington National Cemetery website. They march 21 steps across the black mat past the final resting places of the unknown soldiers of World War I, World War II, Korea, and the crypt of the unknown soldier of the Vietnam War. And then with a crisp turn, the sentinel turns 90 degrees, not about face, 90 degrees to face east for 21 seconds. And then he turns a sharp 90 degrees again to face north for 21 seconds. And a crisp shoulder arms movement places the rifle on the shoulder nearest the visitors, always nearest the visitors because the visitors are only on one side, to signify that the sentinel stands between the tomb and any threat. And after the moment, the sentinel paces 21 steps north, turns, and repeats the process. Why are his gloves wet? Did you know that the gloves of the sentinels, and they don't call themselves guard, they call themselves sentinels, did you know that their gloves are moistened when they go out? They do that to prevent losing the grip on the rifle. And does he carry his rifle on the same shoulder all the time? If not, why not? He carries the rifle on the shoulder away from the tomb. After his march across the path, he executes the about face and moves the rifle to the out. And we've mentioned about the about face and so forth. From 1926 to 1937, the tomb was guarded only during daylight hours. And ever since 1937, imagine that, almost 70 years, the tomb has been continuously guarded 24 hours a day, every day of the year. The guards are changed every 30 minutes between 8 a.m. and 7 p.m. during the period from early spring to early autumn, April 1st to September 30th, and every hour between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. the rest of the year. At all other times when the cemetery is closed, the guard is changed every 2 hours. And there are physical traits that one must have to be a guard duty. I don't know if these have been changed recently. This is 2 or 3 years old, these pages are. You have to be between 5'10 and 6 foot 2 inches tall, and your waist size cannot exceed 30 inches. That leaves me out. They must be in superb physical condition, possess an unblemished military record, and with a proportionate weight and build. Very, very interesting. There was a story going around that they had to commit 2 years of their life to guard the tomb and live in a barracks under the tomb and can't drink any alcohol on or off duty for the rest of their lives. That is not true. Sentinels at the tomb do not have to commit to serving there for any fixed period of time. And the average tour of duty is only about half the two-year period claimed by that fake email that was going around. Like most servicemen, tomb guards may either live on base at the nearby Fort Myer or off base in housing of their choosing. There are no restrictions on guards off-duty drinking. And in that email went around and said they can't swear in public for the rest of their lives, and they're given their wreath pin. And they can have it taken away for violating. The Tomb Guard Identification Badge, first awarded in 1957, is an honor for which a guard qualifies by flawlessly performing his duty for several months and passing a test, not something simply handed out to everyone who serves for a given period of time. The 500th Tomb Guard Identification Badge was awarded in early 2002, and the total number of recipients is now around 525, and the award is, as the name states, a badge worn on the pocket of a uniform jacket, not a pin in the lapel. And it goes on to say here, although the claim that guards cannot swear in public for the rest of their lives is fallacious, there is some truth to the notion that the Tomb Guard Identification Badge can be taken away even after the recipient has left the service. The Tomb ID Identification Badge is one of the least awarded badges in the Army, second only to the Astronaut Badge. And since the Sentinels are held to such a high standard, if they ever do anything that's deemed behavior unbecoming a Tomb Guard or bring dishonor upon the Tomb, their badges may be revoked. Even after they've left active duty military service. And as of early 2002, there had been 9 revocations of the Tomb Guard ID badge. Very, very interesting. Of course, they wear very special shoes, very thick soles to keep the heat and the cold from their feet. There are metal heel plates that extend to the top of the shoe in order to make the loud click as they come to a halt. There are no wrinkles, folds, or lint on the uniform. Guard dressed for duty in front of a full-length mirror. I don't know if you've seen the documentary that was on History Channel recently. They actually have big magnifying glasses and stand and go over one another's uniforms if there's a tiny little thread. I mean, you've never seen anything like the way these fellows are dressed. It's just amazing. These shoes also are built in such a way as to allow him to walk with that, so that they don't bob up and down. Their heads do not move when they walk that 21 paces. I mean, it's an amazing sight to see. Their head do not bob up and down with each step, and it gives them a more formal and smooth look to their walk rather than a marching appearance. The soles have a steel tip on the toe and a horseshoe steel plate on the heel. This prevents wear in the sole and allows the sentinel to move smoothly during his movements when he turns to face the tomb and then back down to the mat. Looking to see if there's any. One interesting thing. If you're going to, I actually know somebody that was one of these guards. A tomb guard behavior is not so stringently regulated that he's prohibited from speaking to anyone for a full 6 months, like people have rumored. And guards may do whatever they want, including watching TV during their off-duty hours. But since any soldier wishing to become a sentinel must undergo rigorous training, including several hours a day of marching, rifle drill, and uniform preparation, and every tomb sentinel is expected to be completely, and I'm talking completely, versed in the history of both the tomb and of Arlington National Cemetery, including knowing how to find the graves of all of the prominent persons buried in the cemetery. So they don't necessarily have a lot of free time to devote to recreational activities. There are some people buried in Arlington National Cemetery that you would not expect to be there. Joe Lewis, the Brown Bomber, the heavyweight champion of the world between 1937 and 49, he is interned at Arlington National Cemetery. Joe E. Lewis, the comedian, is buried in New Jersey. So, although Joe Lewis served in the Army during World War II, he did not meet the technical requirements for burial at Arlington, but he is interred there because President Reagan waived the requirements when Lewis died in 1981. And as I recall, he did that because of Joe Lewis doing so much during the war to put on shows for the soldiers and so forth, and that's the reason. I remember seeing Joe Lewis's grave there. It kind of sat off by itself just a little bit. And how many of you know the answer? There are only two presidents buried in Arlington National Cemetery. And one is John F. Kennedy, of course, who was buried there immediately preceding his death as being the president of the United States. The other is William Howard Taft, and he was buried there. And how many of you know this? Not immediately after being the President of the United States or serving as a private citizen, but after being on the Supreme Court of the United States. William Howard Taft became Supreme Court member after being President of the United States. So, a little interesting historical tidbits for you there. I hope you don't mind giving a little history lessons today. I find those things interesting. I sometimes think everybody does, so there we have it. Got another great selection for you on this day, and I think you'll love this. I certainly do.
We remember those departed on this Memorial Day. Men who stood tall with pride the American way. Duty beckoned, they met the call, all gave some gave all. Remember those brave warriors, place flags and be sure to pray. Men who fought for our freedom, shed blood for a brighter day. When duty beckoned, they always stood tall. All gave some, but some gave all.
America, the beautiful, may your flag always wave. Our country they protected, our future they helped save. True heroes we honor, our duty on this day. Remember all the fallen on this Memorial Day. Remember, read the markers, their memory won't fade away. Men who lived with true honor, a debt we can't repay. When duty beckoned, they did not stall. All gave some, but some gave all. God, the beautiful, may your flag always wave. Our country they protected, our future they help save. True heroes we honor, our duty on this day. Remember all the fallen on this Memorial Day. True heroes we honor, our duty on this day.
And we're back. Don't know what happened there. That ended kind of sudden. Guess we just, piano player got tired on me. I don't know. Hey, glad to have you along with us on this Memorial Day. If you have a story, a friend or family or a personal story to talk about the military today, your service to the country, your family, someone in your family, give us a call, 866-546-5254. We've laid off politics as much as possible today to kind of talk about those who have given all, and as the saying goes, some have given all and all have given some, that we're in the service, and we're so proud of everybody that has served. That, you know, nowadays, when you think about it, nowadays, that this is a volunteer army. my hat's off to everybody that's in the service these days, volunteered to go, for whatever reason they did it for. My hat's off to them, because when you've got a president like we have right now that might send you any place on earth at a moment's notice, whether the war is justified or not, you've got a lot of guts, and I admire you for that. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Is it me?
Yes.
Hey, Guy, this is Dave.
Hi, Dave.
I was going to share with you a couple of trivia history trivia things on this day.
Love those sort of things.
Yeah. By my own veteran experience, I was in during the early start of the Vietnam War teaching water skiing in Ethiopia. That was my contribution. But what Civil War general broke out into tears when he learned of the assassination of Lincoln? And I'll give you one clue. He was also shot twice in his wooden leg.
Twice in his wooden... Would have it been Meigs?
No.
Huh?
I guess a lot of them did have wooden legs.
Yeah.
Richard Ewell, he was really devastated by the death.
Oh, wow. Okay, I didn't know that. I've been in the home across the street where Lincoln died, and I guess many of us have, and looked at that tiny bed that he lay in and so forth, but I did not know that. And I don't think a lot of people understand somebody else was supposed to get killed that night as well, but it didn't turn out the way they thought.
Oh, yeah, in fact, that was supposed to be. President's mother was so unhappy with his politics, her son's politics, that she refused to attend either of his inaugurations?
Oh, good question. Oh, these are good, Dave. when you can stump me with these,
You probably figured this one out.
Well, you know, if it was mother-in-law, I would know the answer. But mother, I'm not sure. Mother was so unhappy with both of his inaugurations. I don't know, Dave.
She was a British loyalist, and it was George Washington.
Oh! Is that right? Did she remain a British loyalist her whole life? I wonder.
I don't know. I have been exposed to just some of these little trivias. One of them that I'd always enjoyed in the past, but Reagan ended it all, was that there were four different presidents. If you want, knew the youngest elected, the youngest to serve, the oldest elected, and the oldest to serve. That was before Reagan, who became the oldest elected and the oldest to serve.
Yeah.
Would you have known those?
Oldest elected. Here, give me that again.
But the oldest president elected, this is pre-Reagan, and
okay.
The oldest president to serve. The youngest elected and the youngest to serve. That's four different people if you learn at Reagan.
Oldest elected. Man, you're pulling out some good ones here today.
A clue on him is he only lived a month.
Oh, as the president?
Yeah. He was elected at age 69 and died at age 69. William Henry Harrison.
Harrison.
He caught pneumonia at his inauguration.
And I should know that, of course, being he was an Ohio boy. Several presidents from Ohio.
One president prior to Reagan had reached the age of 70 while in office.
And one?
One. I, too, would have thought him to be buried in Arlington.
I don't know.
The only five-star president.
Oh, Eisenhower.
Dwight Eisenhower.
Yeah.
Reached 71.
Yeah. Oh, my. Eisenhower, you know, a lot of people forget where he used to live. He lived at, actually on the edge, you might say, of the Gettysburg battlefield. His farm was literally right down the road from...
Yes.
From Gettysburg, a beautiful, beautiful place. And Eisenhower, an interesting story. You know, like you said, the only five-star general to become president and probably the last. I don't know. We don't even have any five stars right now, do we?
No, there aren't. They were all at the end of World War II, although I think Omar Bradley was a little later than that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know who all the five stars were?
No, certainly not.
The Army had five of them. They were, you'd know them all, of course. They were Marshall and Eisenhower, MacArthur and Bradley, and Half Arnold.
They wouldn't give it to Patton. He was a naughty boy.
No, he went from 4-3 to 4-3 a few times.
he must have just given them fits, as MacArthur gave Harry Truman fits.
Yeah. Well, on the other one, before I forget it, the youngest elected, you know who that is.
That's Kennedy.
That's Kennedy. And the youngest to serve took office on the death of McKinley.
Oh, boy, I'm drawing a blank today.
Teddy Roosevelt.
Teddy Roosevelt.
About 3 months younger than John F. Kennedy.
Wow. 3 months younger. Well, you know, it's that's another thing. You know, you remind when you go to Arlington, you go up to where Kennedy's grave is. And the last time I was there was maybe 2 weeks after Jackie passed away. And they didn't have her permanent marker in yet. But it's a most impressive sight to see. And in perpetuity, that particular site overlooks the mall and everything else in Washington, D.C. You couldn't have a better view than it is from there. So
the United States could certainly use another Kennedy about now, I can tell you.
Oh, wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't it, though? I mean, that's a phrase that gets overused nowadays, a breath of fresh air, but he was, and we need another one. We could so use somebody to come in and sweep the cobwebs out right now and get the country back. You know, it's just somebody everybody can say, yeah, I really like the guy, and I trust him. And, you know, we wouldn't agree with him all politically all the time, but if we liked him enough, I think we could overlook a few things.
Well, you know, thank you for everything, Guy, and don't ever feel the need to let up on these criminal goons in our White House because of us, because we listen to you, because you put them on Front Street better than anybody, and that's why we're here.
Yeah, we won't forget. We decided to give them a little bit of a day off today. We still got some half hour left in the program, and I got to completely let them go today, but we gave them the holiday off. Dave, thanks so much for calling, and thanks for being a good listener.
Thank you for being there, Guy.
Thank you. Ah, some interesting trivia facts to a guy that loves trivia. Boy, I do love trivia. I've been accused of having my head full of more worthless stuff than you can possibly imagine. For what it's worth to you, Memorial Day, by the way, was started by a man named John A. Logan, the man after whom John A. Logan College is named, and he was born February 9th, 1826 in what's now Murfreesboro, Illinois. And he was raised in a home that was a center of political activity, and he came to love politics at an early age. And in 1840, his father, Dr. John Logan, sent him to Shiloh Academy at Shiloh Hill, Illinois, to complete his education. And there, he excelled in oratory. And he volunteered for the Mexican War in 1846, and he saw no combat, but he did travel to Santa Fe, where he served as post-quartermaster and learn Spanish. And during the 50s, there were a lot of changes in his life. He went to law school at Louisville's University. He got married at that time. He moved to Benton and had a political career that led from county clerk to U.S. congressman in southern Illinois. At the onset of the Civil War, the formerly pro-Southern Logan decided that the Union must prevail, and he fought at Bull Run as a civilian, and then he returned home, where his speech at Marion ended Egypt's talk of secession, Illinois that is, and put Southern Illinois during the Civil War strongly in the Union camp. And Logan volunteered for the war and rose from colonel to major general, fighting in 8 major campaigns, and he distinguished himself at Vicksburg and commanded the entire Union forces at the Battle of Atlanta. And after a very distinguished military career, he decided that there ought to be a Memorial Day. And I'm trying to think when exactly the date was it. I'm looking. You would think I would have had the date here, but I don't. But it was he that was the one who started Memorial Day. So his fame didn't die with him. Towns and counties are named for him. And there's some fine equestrian statues erected in Chicago and Washington in his honor. And a bronze plaque from Arlington Cemetery. So he, let's see, May. Still can't find the date. He was elected to the U.S. Senate in 1871, and again in 1874. First organized Veterans Memorial Services at Woodlawn Cemetery in Carbondale in 1866. And in 1868, he helped found Memorial Day as a national holiday. There are several stories around about actually who and where Memorial Day started. Everybody always wants to take credit for it. But it boils down to that it was John A. Logan. So great thing that he did. And we were talking earlier about the Lee Mansion, Arlington House, and it was General Meigs that despised the fact. He knew General Robert E. Lee very well, and he despised the fact that Lee fought with the South. And he had a real vendetta against him, and it was Meigs who had the Rose Garden dug up and 1,800 soldiers buried there. And Robert E. Lee never returned to claim his home, and again, why his son ended up with $150,000 from the Supreme Court ruling that came back many years later. General Meigs was buried nearby in what is now a national cemetery, only 100 yards away from Arlington House. And he's the one that really made the whole thing start to happen there at Arlington National Cemetery. 866-546-5254. If you have a story you'd like to share with us, we'd love to hear from you. 866-546-5254. Let's just go to the phone right now. And hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello? Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Is it me, I guess?
Yes, it is.
It's Wayne from West Virginia, Guy.
Hi, Wayne.
How you doing, bud?
I'm great.
Listen, I've been listening to the show, you know, from the beginning. Well, I had to take a short ride, but in the beginning you started talking, and, you know, it's very hard to not bring political things into this. And, well, it's extremely hard for me, and that's what I'm talking about. Now, you know, if that's unacceptable, I won't talk about it.
No, we said we gave them part of the day off.
Well, they've had enough time off as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
You know, in the beginning of the show, you referenced more Memorial Day and then Labor Day. And, you know, when you think about it, you're talking about the same people. You're honoring the same people. The soldiers are the workers. The veterans are the workers. The people that gave up their lives to protect this republic are workers. And in many ways, you know, this is a wonderful day, but I think the best thing that we could possibly do to honor both these days is to take this republic back. And we have to work at that very, very seriously, because I think that this republic and this form of government is in more danger of being lost today than in any time in its history.
I couldn't agree more, Wayne. The nation is in peril. There's no question about it. And you know, that's a great, great point that you bring up about the workers also being the soldiers. That's so true. It's so true. It's always the common man that lays the bricks and fires the rifles. I mean, you are right on the money with that.
Well, you know, whether we like to admit it or not, we live in pretty much a class system.
Yes.
And the workers are the class that does everything. They do the wars. They, you know, build the buildings. They go to work every day, and they work hard. And like I say, I think that we have a wonderful opportunity here to make a statement. I think statements are being made. You know, people have to hang together, and you know, I'm not a believer in a third political party. I believe that we could fix the Democratic Party, and we're going to have a golden opportunity to do that in November. The first thing we have to do is give them control of the House and make them 100% responsible. Then they could be held 100% accountable. And if they don't do the right thing, they're gone in 2008.
You know, they're the ones that supposedly, well, you know, they talked about a personal accountability all the time, and I don't think they know what the word means.
Well, no, they don't. That goes on both sides of the fence.
I mean, this does.
My God, you know, we're in grave danger here. But the people have the power to take it back. And, you know, in my way of thinking, that's through the Democratic Party. But, you know, in the same sense, if we give the Democratic Party this opportunity, they have to be held 100% accountable. And, you know, things like K Street and 34,000 lobbyists or however many, we elect our lobbyists. I voted for my lobbyist, and anybody that isn't there because of people's vote should get the hell out of town.
Oh, you're exactly right. And
we don't need them.
You know, you're so right. And I was looking over the list at who's voted for what as far as making our Democratic Congress critters responsible for what they should do, what's being done. And we've got five in there right now that voted for Michael Hayden to take over as commandant, you might as well say, of the CIA.
That's exactly right.
And Alberto Gonzalez to take over as a supreme ruler of all law in the United States. Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, Joe Lieberman of Connecticut, Bill Nelson of Florida, Ben Nelson of Nebraska, and David Pryor of Arkansas, all five of those voted for both of those people. You're exactly right. They need to be held accountable.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And removed, you know.
Yep.
Joe Lieberman is in the process of being removed, I believe. And you know, hopefully that'll send a shot across the bow of some other people that aren't always with us. You know, I mean, they're with us sometimes, but some of the votes they make are just, well, totally inexcusable.
Those
ones you just talked about certainly are. I mean, you know, the Attorney General of the United States went to the president and said he's going to quit if the president won't allow him to break the laws.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'd have told him, well, you know, when can you have your office cleaned out, pal?
Yeah, and has advised him 750 different times, him and Ashcroft, since Bush has been in office, to go ahead and sign laws into being, but also put the little signing statement at the end of them, I don't consider these laws constitutional, therefore I will break them anytime I wish.
Exactly. The old
amazing.
Old boy still around.
Yeah.
People don't think he is.
That's right. That's right.
God. Anyway, I'm sorry. You know, politics is an intricate part of everything. And like I say, I mean, what we've done to our veterans, you know, I mean, we have not kept our promise.
Definitely not.
Veteran.
Definitely not.
And I'm a veteran myself. Now, I'm not a combat veteran, but I was there ready and willing. And, the way to honor them is to honor their service, take care of them, and take this republic back. And I think we can do that. I truly do.
Well, I think we can, too, and I think we're going to.
Thanks. I agree.
Thanks so much for your call.
My pleasure.
Good to hear from you.
Bye.
Got a note from a lady who lost a son in Iraq. And, I don't have the whole thing here. I just copied off the part that I wanted to read to you. And it was about Arlington. And I thought, what a poignant, beautiful thing to say. Would that I had the writing ability of this lady, and who obviously has the heart and mind to write such beautiful words. She wrote of Arlington, an old friend who lovingly, sadly, opens his door for what must come. Arlington is America's memory of what makes the nation. Other memorials on the mall are wonderful and meaningful, but Arlington is not only for us, it is of us. Generations have made this place part of the national fabric. Rich man, poor man, general, private, lifer, conscript, all services, all heritages. Men and women who gave the full measure, honored in perpetuity. There are no surprises in Arlington. Everything is as manicured, as perfect as nature can be made. Acres and acres of military order. Simple, dignified, elegant. As long as there is Arlington, there will be America. Beautiful words. Absolutely beautiful words. Let's do a little music right now, okay? I know you'll like this.
Yeah. last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Anne Braden.
You know, I got interested in Anne's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Welcome back. Down to the last few minutes of the Memorial Day Guy James Show special edition, live special edition today. I have taken most of the day off from politics, and I promised you that I would take most of it off, and I've kept my promise. But I cannot keep silent over another, what I consider to be just horrible, horrible transgression by this SOB, who is the President of the United States right now. Once again, with the backdrop of American soldiers standing in front of him at West Point, Bush draws parallels with Harry S. Truman. I mentioned to you a couple of days ago, Friday, that I was outraged by this, and I'm even more outraged that he would go to West Point and do this, where he knows he is safe, where he knows there is not one person in that audience that dare say a word about him or complain about anything he says or sit silently by. He is a coward to go to the United States Military Academy at West Point and draw a parallel, a comparison between himself and Harry S. Truman. And I might add, Captain Harry S. Truman, who served with honor and dignity in the First World War. To compare himself to Harry S. Truman is the worst kind of lie. He knows what he's doing. His people have put him up to this. He probably isn't smart enough to do it himself. His people have put him up to this and given him the words to say, because he doesn't know anything about Harry Truman. You know that. If you gave him a questionnaire on Harry Truman, he would fail it miserably. You know that for a fact. Don't have to do any research on that. You know he would fail it. For him to go out and compare himself to Harry S. Truman is the worst kind of lie in front of future military heroes at West Point. And then it's in the New York Times. I just can't abide this man going out and drawing any kind of a comparison. This man could not carry Harry Truman's shorts for him. This man in no way in the world compares to a man like Harry Truman. It makes me sick to death to hear him go out and do this sort of thing. I promised I'd be nice today, and I was, except for that. I couldn't stand it anymore to see that sitting in front of me there. There's a wall of marble, 500 feet long. It's in Washington. 10 feet high, scribed with names of those who died, the strong. There's more than 58,000 etched upon that stone. Most of them died so young, this life they've never known. It's such a small tribute to those who fought our war. Such a price we pay to those who gave much more. Their name carved in a rock that most of us won't read, not near enough praise to give for the most gracious deed. Seems there are too many of us who don't really seem to care that we stayed home secure and safe while they died over there. Remember when you see that wall with all those initials and names that those men were only pawns in one more of those deadly games. Let's hope what they gave had meaning, and that peace will always reign. That we won't have to send our young to fight and die again. By Abe Jones. Well, Abe, we failed in that mission. We absolutely failed to keep our young men from fighting and dying again. What can we do when we have people like this leading the government? We have to change the government. And we will. For this is a decent nation that will no longer put up with this sort of thing. This is a nation that eventually will come to its senses and understand what is happening, that we've wasted the wonderful resources of our young men and women in a needless war once again. As needless as Vietnam was, so is this war. Thousands of our young men and women have died in both of those wars, both of them totally unnecessary. Shameful act by the United States of America in both cases. But the United States will rebound, will come back from this, will change this evil government that we have, and we'll make it right again. I promise you we will. It's been good to have you along today on the special edition of the Guy James Show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth.